welcome to Popcorn Brothers Movie Club. It's a podcast where two brothers make each other watch their favorite movies and then talk about them. I'm Isaac.
And I'm Eli.
Well, this is exciting.
Yeah. What? So what movie did you bring to the table today?
Wait, we have to like introduce this thing.
Well, we should say what we're going to talk about. We'll go over. Okay, it's like it's an overview of the episode.
Okay, well, I made you watch one of my favorite movies of all time, Singing in the Rain, because you had never seen it before.
Mm-hmm. And I made you watch one of my favorite movies of all time, because you hadn't seen it, called Gangs of New York. And we will be discussing our opinions on these movies and letting you all know what we think about them, and then judging each other's opinions and letting you judge our opinions. But we like to begin each episode with a segment where we watch a new trailer.
I was going to explain how this came to be.
Oh, okay. So this is our first episode. So here's a history lesson about the Popcorn Brothers.
I guess this just sort of came about because blogs are old school, and I've always kind of wanted to do a blog type thing, but podcasts are my new thing that I'm into instead, I guess. So I was like, what if we had a podcast?
Yeah, no one read Isaac's Zanga. Did you have a Zanga? I had a Zanga.
I had a WordPress blog though.
You had a
a Blogger.
What'd you write about?
I tried to write about TV.
Okay.
I would do recaps sometimes, or I did
Can we look it up later? Do you still have it?
God,
you
think I'm sure it's totally online, but I don't think anybody wants to look at it.
We'll find it later, and everyone.
Now people are gonna Google it and be like, yeah, "What the heck is this?"
You can
this?
Google Isaac's name and find his old stuff.
And it sort of came about too because I guess I sort of got the idea because we were hanging out at our parents' house, and there was nothing on, so we watched Tootsie, which is another one of my favorite movies, and you've never seen it before. And that was, I guess, where I sort of got the idea of, I was like, oh, what if I made Eli watch these movies that he hasn't seen, and then he could make me do the same thing, and then we could just talk about them.
It's absolutely true. Tootsie is a much better version of Miss Doubtfire.
No, yes.
No harsh on Robin Williams.
And the original.
Yeah. What? The original what?
I mean, it was out before Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah. Mrs. Doubtfire was a copy. And no one ever told me that. Okay, so that's that little history lesson for
Eli's
you.
Eli's going to have to watch all of these drag movies that he had no idea even existed.
I will suddenly go from having seen one musical in my life to seeing every single one that exists, and Isaac will have a complete lesson on action and war movies.
Oh, Lord.
Anything. Everyone has bled on screen. Isaac will have seen them at some point, because that's what I've seen, apparently, and watched. And sci-fi. Sci-fi and fantasy.
I've seen some.
You have not seen the most important sci-fi and fantasy movies to exist, but it's an opinion for later. Okay, so on to our next segment. We are watching a trailer. We'll do this every week, I guess. Do we have a name for this segment? It's the...
No.
The Popcorn Brothers trailer watch.
And yeah, I like that.
We'll have a little musical sound. It'll play right now. And then we'll watch a trailer. And
so today, what are we going to watch?
We're going to watch Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Which I'm sure everybody is heavily anticipating.
Is excited for, right? The first one was well received. I liked it. Did you like it, Isaac? We saw it in theaters.
Yeah, we went and saw it. That was... Oh, should I tell them that story of what happened?
You can... let's watch the trailer, okay, and then we'll talk about our feelings.
It was about the old Jurassic World one. It was just a funny thing that happened while we were there. While we were there, you and Caleb sat in a different part of the theater, and me and Mom and Dad and our grandma had to sit on the front row, basically. But the movie's 30 minutes in, and I was sitting by my grandma, and she leans over to me, and she goes, is this a real place?
Oh, yeah. Classic. Classic our grandma. What is everything in the movie real life all the time? But, yeah, our family did see that together. And Caleb's our little brother, for those of you who don't know. We go see movies as a family pretty regularly. I would say a few times a year.
Yeah,
three or
see
four.
A couple.
It's a good tradition.
I don't know that they're always ones that Mom likes to watch, but...
No, or she falls asleep. She falls asleep, calling him out. Yeah, okay. Speaking of that, on Nana, though, we recently saw Murder on the Orient Express, and our grandma likes to yell out lines before characters speak them at critical moments in movies, which is just hilarious.
It was a pretty predictable line that was coming up, but the fact that it was dead silent in the theater and she said it out loud while everyone was thinking it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I like to say that she just spoke for the people and that it wasn't an interruption, but I don't really know if that's true. She definitely, it was loud and it was funny. But Okay, so we're going to watch this trailer, and the next time you hear from us here in a second, we will have seen it. And this is your chance to pause it and go watch it if you want to be up to date on Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdoms teaser. But, okay, so we just, that was our, this is our take on the new Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom trailer. So, looks like there's a volcano. Nah, if you haven't seen this. Yeah,
that you thought was a bomb first.
Spoiler, yeah, it sounded like there was a bomb on the island, which was pretty exciting. I could see like a, it's like Hurt Locker or Jurassic Park crossover, but that is not the case. There is a volcano. I don't know why. Wouldn't they have known that there was a volcano in the last movie?
That's what I kind of thought too. As I was like, okay, I didn't see a volcano. They built this theme park on this volcano, and I was like, that sounds like a great idea. That like going, getting the future. Like if the dinosaurs didn't get out, what we would just be waiting. We would all be visiting Jurassic World and then waiting for this volcano to kill us all instead of the dinosaurs.
Definitely an oversight by the people that built the park this time around, because they could have built it not on a volcano. And a lot of people, there were a lot of people that glossed over that when they were constructing this park and pulling in employees. They all decided to work on an island that was an active volcano, most likely.
Maybe. So, well, it could be bombs. I mean, we really, I mean,
there could be bombs in that volcano that we saw. There was, but, no, you saw lava. There was a lot of lava. There was lava. There was a lot of smoke. It looked like, what's the one movie about the city that disappeared into
Atlantis?
No, not Atlantis.
Oh, Pompeii.
Pompeii.
Ooh, Kit Harington.
A little bit of Pompeii. Is he in that?
He is. He's the main person, I think.
Pompeii.
I didn't see that either.
No.
Before Kit Harington was a big deal. Before Game of Thrones was a big deal, I guess. Well, it was always a big deal.
When did Pompeii come out?
It was after Game of Thrones had already started, probably, I think.
Was it a... Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Is it like a... I thought it was like a History Channel made for TV movie.
No, it's like a... It was like a real movie. It was just a total flop, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about it. I mean, you already know what happens. What is there to see?
Like, spoiler alert.
There was a love story right before Pompeii went down. Thanks, Kit. yeah, okay. So this looks pretty good, though. I think, personally, I think this looks like it will be better than the first one. One, because of what Isaac mentioned, I didn't see any kids in
there were no kids in that.
So no, I mean, no whiny children.
That other guy with Bryce Dallas Howard was like younger than her, but he wasn't a child.
Yeah.
Probably an intern.
That's true, yeah. And Jeff Goldblum, which I'm sure everyone has already heard about or read about, is definitely, he's there in a courtroom talking about how he thinks things are a bad idea, which is what he does. it's his thing. His shtick.
I'm not as aware because I haven't seen the first trilogy of Jurassic Park.
You haven't seen the first trilogy?
No,
okay,
haven't.
Well,
I guess I'll be watching one of those.
The only one you need to see is one. Let's not we can just
ignore
the fact.
But what about Julianne Moore?
Which one is she in?
She's in the second one.
Oh, the second one is my least favorite one.
Oh, interesting.
My least favorite one because children. Because
children ruin everything.
Jeff Goldblum's child defeats dinosaurs with her acrobatic skill and she's in middle school. That's like the big ending of the movie. Like she's like,
so
oh, let me swing
the dinosaur instead of jump the shark.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, spoiler alert. She uses she's on a bar like swinging around. I don't even know what you call that. She like trapezes bar to bar and like kicks a raptor in the face.
The uneven bar, she like uneven bars it.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. Yes.
They could have hired Sean Johnson to do it, I'm sure.
They could have hired a different person to write the movie.
They probably hired some Russian acrobat to do the stunts for
it. I do wonder. That's a good question. I wonder who actually did those stunts. I don't think she did them. But yeah, the second one, I mean, it does have their cool scenes. I will rewatch all of the Jurassic Parks regularly.
I do feel
even though
like,
I cannot say that all of them have quality scenes throughout.
Well, I feel like this trailer, if it's true what the director said about all the content for the trailer just being the first hour, like we have no idea I guess where it's going from there, so that could be interesting. And maybe I would assume that they're purposefully leaving a bunch of that out because they don't want you to be like spoiled or to feel like it's spoiled, but
I guess
it doesn't really, there wasn't really a whole lot going on in that trailer other than the volcano exploding and a bunch of running from dinosaurs.
Yeah, and there must be a big subplot and a good reason they're actually there. They're not
they're trying
saving
to save
the dinosaurs
for money.
Do they really want to save the dinosaurs?
I don't know. They brought them back to life at some point in this timeline of these movies, which somebody thought was a good idea, and I don't understand that part either. But
someone on this island has stored the information somewhere on the cloud. They know how to make dinosaurs. Why do they need to save these dinosaurs? What is the point of going back to the island?
I don't know. I'm not well versed in the science of Jurassic Park. But remember that guy in the first movie, like in Jurassic World was kind of like the bad guy that stole the DNA or whatever and like slipped off the island. Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, he's a famous actor, I think, but what was his name?
I do. He needs a name. He's definitely going to be a super villain. I could guess
what it is, but I don't, don't know. And that might come out incorrect.
I'm Googling it. Let's see what comes up here. What is his name? Here's his picture.
It's B.D. Wong. B.D. That's what Wong. I thought.
Yeah, but I wanted to know Dr. Henry Wu. Okay, yeah. If you haven't thought a lot about the first movie, you do see that this guy is like subversively or secretly the bad guy.
He's like an assistant.
It's like he whispers into the ear of the guy who's in charge of the park and affects his decisions and turns out to really be the bad guy and gets away. Gets away in the movie, right? Yeah,
he slips away. It's like pretty early on.
He dips from the island, but he is the one that caused all the trouble because I guess he was trying to, what was he trying to do? What did he do? Steal things?
I think he just...
Did he just want destruction? I don't remember.
No, I think he stole the, like, way to make the dinosaurs because I'm sure he was afraid that the whole park was... Everybody was just going to die, so I guess he slipped away with it, like...
Okay.
It wasn't... I mean, obviously, there were some, like, sinister connotations with the way he appeared in the movie, but we didn't get any overt, like, this guy's a bad guy because of this, so...
But he obviously but was.
We can assume that's where he showed his hand. We know he's a bad guy. I mean, it was conceived... You know? I'm sure this was conceived as a... The second set, the Jurassic Worlds, were conceived as a trilogy, I'm sure, so they're probably going somewhere with it.
Yeah, I don't think the first trilogy was conceived as a trilogy, was definitely where it fell. Fell hard on its face.
Well, now everything... They conceive almost every sort of movie like this as a franchise or multiple films because this is a, they just want to bank them, milk them for all they're worth, so...
Yeah, that's how they ruined The Hobbit, I recall. I will never rewatch those movies.
And now Amazon's going to do something else with that property.
If they attempt to write new content in the Lord of the Rings universe again, I swear that I don't know what I can do within my power, but I will do everything in my power to stop them and to... I don't know. There'll be a lot of rants on this. So if you're still listening when the new Amazon series comes out, I will definitely have a strong opinion about how they add stupid content into the Lord of the Rings universe, which was fine and could have made fine film without.
I don't know anything about any of it, so we'll get there. I'm sure too.
Okay. Well, that is our review of the Jurassic World trailer. Check it out if you have not seen it. We didn't describe everything. It does look like they ride one of those circular balls into the ocean, and then there's a bunch of dinosaurs in the ocean that also that are escaping. Dead. Well, yeah, I guess they're dead. I don't know how well dinosaurs swim.
I don't think they can.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of floating and or sinking dinosaurs, and some cool cinematography. Cute baby raptors at one point. Not so cute if they turn on our humans and Chris Pratt, who has grown a mustache for this.
I think he did. I don't think he had
pretty
that
sure
before.
The mustache is new. The mustache.
That's not the best mustache I've ever seen.
I think it looks great, Chris. You're doing a great job. great actor. Good mustache. And I'm excited. I'm excited for this movie. I'll be seeing it.
I'm sure we'll all see it.
When does it come out? What did it say? So we can tell our viewers.
I'm sure. I think it's this summer.
This summer? Is that when it's... Okay. In theaters, so. June 22nd, 2018. Yeah. Okay. So summer. 6 months from now. Is that typical? 6 months before release? Trailers? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Heavy trailer, yeah.
Yeah. So we... 6 months from now.
An actual trailer, not a teaser. None of that BS.
So I guess... I don't know how many episodes that is from now, but I guess we'll definitely review it. That'll be like... If two episodes a month, that's like... 13 episodes from now.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. We just got to get through this one right now.
Don't listen to him, guys. We're doing fine. Okay. Okay. So we're going to get into the meat of this episode with our movie opposing given movies to each other. Segment
they
called
they were kind of opposing. They were totally different movies.
They are. I think it will regularly be opposing. And
well, I think that works nicely.
We can call this like segment opposing views. Yeah, there you go. But do you want to go first?
I can. First movie we'll ever do is Singing in the Rain.
You've got your book open. Do you want to tell everyone what book
you have? I
have a
big book about musicals. It's called Musicals, The Definitive Illustrated Story.
And it is a big book. It's one of those DK
books. It's like
books.
Who's DK?
Okay, I don't know who DK is. Not Donkey Kong, but the producer.
Publisher.
Yeah, they have those giant hardcover books.
It's like a coffee table book kind of,
too. Yeah, that's what I would call it. But it's... Very, very cool pictures. Lots of stuff about musicals. Singing in the Rain is in there, as
is almost every musical on Broadway and television and film. So
yeah, but Singing in the Rain, is it not one of the defining American musicals?
It definitely is. It's
not the defining American musical.
It is, and it's kind of funny because when it came out, it wasn't really, and I was going to talk about that a little bit, but it's definitely pretty much well known now as probably the greatest movie musical of all time, and one of the greatest films of all time too, I think.
Movie musical as in a movie about movies, or movie musical as in all
movie
movies,
musical
period?
As in a musical that's a movie.
Okay, so no, not even getting into the fact that this is a movie about movies with movies inside of it.
I feel like it tops, I mean, any list that you put it on at this point, I feel like it probably tops a lot of those, just because it's so well regarded.
It is. And it took me by surprise, as someone who does not watch musicals, I've seen parts of Grease, and I've seen, what's the other one I've seen? Not Hairspray. Is that what it's called? It's called Hairspray with John DeVolta.
When I made the list of all the movies, there were lots of musicals on them, and you marked them as having seen them.
Which ones?
Hairspray, Sound of Music,
Grease. Oh, yeah, I've seen Sound of Music. I've seen
Moulin
Grease.
Rouge, Chicago.
I have seen that.
See,
actually, I might have thought Moulin Rouge and Chicago were the same movie. I might have done that. Because I definitely recall the same scene with the girls
them,
in the prison cells dancing.
That's Chicago.
Okay.
But that's not Moulin Rouge.
I thought that was Moulin Rouge, so maybe I just have them reversed and I've seen them both. I might have combined them. I'll have to go back. We'll look at that later.
We'll have to look at that.
A story for another time.
Because those need to be watched, both of them.
Okay.
Required viewing.
Isaac, go ahead and introduce your musical. Tell us a little bit about it, so anyone who hasn't seen Singing in the Rain, you can hear a little bit about the production, the story from Isaac here before we get into it.
All right. Well, Singing in the Rain is an American musical comedy that was directed by Gene Kelly and Stanley Donen, and it was released in 1952. The film stars Gene Kelly as a silent movie star. His name's Don Lockwood. And it's the late 20s, so he's trying to stay on top of the movie industry while the movies convert to sound movies. From previously, they were silent films. Let's see. Other people in the movie include Donald O'Connor playing Cosmo Brown, who is Gene Kelly's best friend and his former vaudeville partner, and he works for the movie studio. He does the music. Gene Hagen appears as Don's irritating movie partner, Lena Lamont, and Demi Reynolds plays an aspiring actress that Don falls in love with, and then the studio turns to when they need a voice to dub Lena's dialogue and singing for their new movie, since she has a very irritating voice.
Lena was absolutely irritating, and I despised her the entire movie. Even before she talked, she's so good at being...
Well, it's funny that purposefully she doesn't say anything for a good early portion of the movie, and then they surprise you with what she sounds like.
Yeah, and it sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's
just
awful.
She has the worst
They don't let her
voice.
Speak like at the premiere, and then even when she and Don like first are acting together in their movies the first time, they don't
she doesn't say anything. She has to be related to that girl who's in the TV version of Annie that we always watch. Do you know that girl that's a bad guy?
I love Kristen Chenoweth.
That girl's voice is the same. That's exactly why I don't want to watch Annie.
Nowhere near the same.
They both have that same nasally
except
tone.
For Kristen Chenoweth can actually sing, and she can sing very well, so
that's true. It's the tone, though. We're talking about
But that's not even her, that's not even Gene Hagen's real voice. That's actually not her voice. That's a fake voice that she's doing.
So she's lip syncing. She's in the movie, she's singing for someone who's lip syncing to her voice, but she's actually lip syncing to someone else's voice.
No, Gene Hagen has a fake voice, so they're dubbing her like fake voice because her voice doesn't sound like that in real life. She just put that on for the character.
Oh.
And at one point, actually, they pretend like Debbie Reynolds is dubbing for her, but it's her real voice, Gene Hagen's real voice.
Oh.
The famous line that they're talking about, "Our love will run till the stars gone cold," or whatever that line is when she says it. They pretend like Debbie Reynolds is saying it, but it's actually Gene Hagen saying it. There's a lot of dubbing
really
and voice play in this movie, and it's kind of confusing, I won't lie, but it's kind of ironic too, considering the subject of the movie.
That's very odd to me, because it's not confusing when I was watching it. I understood what was happening, but now that we're getting into actual, like, the detail of, like, why so many people had to use not their own voice versus, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I think it's just complicated when we're trying here to sit here talking about it. But
it is complicated. So, anything else about the production here?
I have some more stuff about the production. The film was conceived by MGM producer Arthur Freed, who actually made, over 40 musicals for MGM from the late 30s to the early 60s. He had his own, like, leg of the studio, I guess, that he ran, and they did all kinds of musicals, including An American in Paris, which was done right before Singing in the Rain. And Singing in the Rain was kind of done to capitalize on the success from American in Paris, because it did well commercially. It won Best Picture at the Oscars, so it was very well regarded. So Arthur Freed said, let's make another one with Gene Kelly, and Gene Kelly did a lot of the MGM musicals too, but they said, let's make this other one to kind of capitalize on that. And Singing in the Rain actually doesn't really have a lot of original songs in it. Arthur Freed made the film using songs that he had previously written with Nacio Herb Brown for various MGM musical films from 1929 to 1939. So most of them already were in other movies. The screenwriters Betty Comden and Adolph Green did write two new songs for the film, Make 'Em Laugh and Moses Supposes. And the music director Roger Edens wrote the music for Moses Supposes. Notable musical numbers from the film, though, include Singing in the Rain, Make 'Em Laugh, Good Morning, and then the 14-minute Broadway Melody Ballet segment towards the end of the film.
14-minute Broadway Ballet? Oh, I do remember that. You
know, where they just throw
this in the end. Yeah, like, hey, what about this scene that we could make in this movie, and then just show you the entire thing?
Well, let's not pretend like this whole movie wasn't basically just made so that we can watch Gene Kelly dance for 9 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's nonsense, and that we'll definitely get into my opinions on tap dancing and whether or not I think it's a viable form of entertainment for a movie.
Oh, gosh.
But
well, if you thought that this 14-minute segment was too much, don't watch An American in Paris. There's a 26 to 28 minute ballet sequence at the end of that one.
I won't be watching it. I can't. Please don't. No one suggested me to watch that movie.
So just a little bit about this singing in the reception to Singing in the Rain. Despite the studio's hopes, it was kind of only a modest hit with critics and the public. I think it was like top 10 for the year in the in terms of money that was made for the studio. But
it's not bad,
the critics weren't. They weren't big fans, which I guess coming off the heels of American in Paris, which people had really regarded as really creative and well done. So it kind of didn't really get a whole lot of buzz back then, I guess. But through the years, I guess people revisiting it, it has grown into easily the most widely regarded movie musical.
Also, I mean, I would definitely think that it's almost like a period piece about Hollywood in a certain time. And if you're in the time, like if you make a movie about life today, right now, and it's just like, it's pretty standard, like, it's not going to blow anyone's minds, because it looks like your everyday life. You're making a movie about regular life in the time period that you're in. So the setting is not interesting.
Well, but this wasn't made in the 20s. It was made in the 50s,
yeah,
about the 20s, so it was like 30 years later.
Yeah, I guess setting a movie in the 80s today is, I mean,
it's very popular. Stranger Things, like,
okay, so maybe I did not word that well. Maybe I'm just wrong. I didn't realize that the time period was that different from what they were talking about.
I mean, yeah, it was a couple decades later, but I think that it kind of, I guess, I mean, I've seen both American in Paris and Singing in the Rain several times. I think that Singing in the Rain is the superior film. American in Paris is kind of hoity-toity, I guess, in a way. It's a little, like, it's really ballet-oriented, and, like, it's not bad. It's a good movie, too. But I can see how, like, if critics had just seen American in Paris and then this Singing in the Rain movie comes out, and it kind of looks like, oh, this is what worked the first time, so we tried to do it again. I can see how people would have thought that back then. But then if you look at the comedy in Singing in the Rain, you look at the dancing, you look at the performances, I think that's kind of where it has eventually grown into why it's so well regarded.
And by comedy, I'd like to let you know that I did not laugh once during this.
What?
I did not laugh once. It's not funny. Humor, I'm a product of modern humor, and humor has come a long way since the 50s.
I mean, it's kind of it's like corny old humor, but I thought some of it was pretty
Make them laugh just made me uncomfortable. It was one of the most uncomfortable scenes
in
the movie.
I'm not a huge, like, defender of Make them laugh, but I mean, it's, for what it's doing, I see why it's, like, I don't think it's that funny either. Yeah. Like,
the psycho musician friend, who, in the movie, there's a friend, the main character.
Donald O'Connor's character.
Okay, Cosmo. Donald O'Connor, who, I think I looked up reviews, and a lot of people were like, he steals the show, and no, he does not steal the show.
I mean, he won the Golden Globe for Best Actor in a musical or comedy.
We know how much awards matter.
Awards have never
won. Okay. Awards are important.
I mean, he... the role that he plays is kind of less important, I guess, to the movie in general, but...
Yeah, I just don't think he's funny, and that's what it's trying so hard to be,
yeah.
But that
I mean,
it definitely comes down to your sense of humor. This is subjective.
Well, of course, and I mean, I really think that most of the humor, the heavy lifting in the humor to me comes from Jean Hagen and her performance as Lena Lamont. So, I mean, I think that most of her stuff is what's really funny, but...
Yeah, I think that's true, and I also, I enjoyed... who played oh man, I don't know. I don't remember any of these characters' names at this point. Okay, so not Gene Kelly, but the girl that ends up being the voice of Lena Lamont. What's
Debbie Reynolds.
Name? Debbie Reynolds. That's the actor's name or that's
the actress's name? Okay. Yes. And her character's is name Kathy.
Okay. So I found Kathy to be funnier than
she is pretty funny. I mean Debbie Reynolds is great. Like
it's just like it's like sarcastic humor, a little more tongue in cheek, and not so much just like trying so blatantly to be funny, but it's just like a smart character.
Well, she's and witty. I think and that definitely
I think that's way funnier than
that definitely shows in the scene where she meets Gene Kelly for the first time when he's like running away from the like mob because after his like film premiere and he like jumps on the streetcar and then like falls into her car and she's like trying to get rid of him and then
and he's being a creeper just well, straight up creeping
like,
on her.
Well, first he was like, oh, like, it's so hard, like, running away from all these people. And then she's not having any of it. She's like, ah, well, if you've seen one movie, you've seen them all. Like, and so then it's kind of funny because I think that he is interested in the fact that she's not acting like everybody else. But then he's annoyed by the fact that she's not, like, clamoring all over him to be, like, up with this movie star. So that I thought that's one of my favorite scenes, too. I think it's just funny. But Gene Kelly and Debbie Reynolds have a really nice chemistry with each other. Oh, I want to bring up the fact that Debbie Reynolds was not a trained dancer at all. I mean, she was like a gymnast, but it's kind of funny if you like she talked about it later on. She wasn't a trained dancer, but she was expected to keep up with Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor. And there's like a funny story about how like Gene Kelly, who's kind of like a taskmaster on the set and stuff, because he's choreographing. He's doing the dancing. He's also directing. So apparently he insulted her at some point. And then like on the studio lot, she was like crying under a piano and Fred Astaire came by and he was like, oh, like what's wrong? And Fred Astaire is another classic dancer from the probably about the same era of film. And so Fred Astaire became her dancing teacher. And so he helped her to be proficient enough to do some incredible dancing with Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor, especially if you watch Good Morning. The Good Morning segment, apparently it took like 14 hours to film, and then at the end, Debbie Reynolds had to be carried off the set because her feet were bleeding. So,
dang.
The dancing was no joke back then.
They do. I mean, they go all out. It's an athletic, they're doing
an definitely.
Athletic thing.
Gene Kelly has a very athletic style to his dance, I would say.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's impressive. Whether or not it's entertaining is a whole separate matter to see
sure,
people
I mean,
tap
that's
dancing
subjective.
For long periods of time.
I mean, I'll defend it because the dancing in the movie is, I think, one of the strengths of the film is just the incredible dancing that they're doing.
I think one of the strengths is that I went into this thinking it would be entirely musical throughout, and there was a lot of story and just like...
And a pretty good story.
No, it is a good story. I like how it tied into just the time in history where it went from silent films to films that contain audio. I guess they call them talking pictures. Talkies. So yeah, I find that really interesting because I don't think about that a lot, and it's cool to see them cover that historical moment where all the studios are in a rush to switch from silent films to films that have people talking, and voices are important at that point. And that's what sparks this whole
story. Sort of, I mean, a lot of the story is about how they're like trying to figure out how to make it work because the studio has these really successful actors that they want to use in this talking picture. Gene Kelly's character Don has a perfectly lovely singing and talking voice, but Gene Hagen's character Lena Lamont has an awful one, so they have to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah. And let's see.
And I kind of like the scene where they're the scene where they film, like they do a preview of their really terrible film, The Dueling Cavalier.
Oh yeah.
At the theater, and like all the sound stuff is messed up, like when she'll move her mouth away from the microphone, so it like cuts in and out, and they're like in the scene, I guess it's two scenes where they're filming it, and they like have to move the microphone various places, and she says they put it in the bush at first, and she's like, I can't make love to a bush, and then so they put it on her chest, they sew the microphone into her chest on the dress, and it's like beating so you can hear the heartbeat in the thing, and then they put it on her shoulder, and she's like moves her mouth in and out of the microphone, so it's picking up, and then it's not picking up, and then the studio head comes in, and I thought this part was funny, maybe you didn't laugh, but he comes in and he's like, what are these wires doing on the floor, they're so dangerous, and he yanks them, and it like rips her dress up.
I have a low brow
sense of humor.
It was, I would qualify it as lowbrow. I was like, what are they doing?
I thought
in
it
this?
Was funny. It's the just, shriek she does is just funny, but
it does fit though, because that production, it's just falling apart at that point. Oh, they don't know what they're doing. She can't act properly.
And
so
they
she
pull
talk.
In at the premiere, and then it's so funny because they make fun of her voice, and then they make fun of the dialogue because at one point Gene Kelly's character is like, well, I'll just do what I always do, which is just say I love you over and over again. And then people are like, what is this joke of a dialogue that you're doing? And they're all like, so then all the stars, like Gene Kelly and their characters are all like standing, like listening to people as they're walking out. And the people are all just bashing it. And then Lena says, I liked it.
Yeah, it's terrible. Her character is terrible. Everything about it is terrible.
Funny.
She plays it very well.
She does.
Very good
and
job.
She, again, one of the only people who was really rewarded for it. She was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for her performance.
I think she could win. I dislike her as much. I remember as a child disliking D.W. in every single episode.
Oh, God,
of,
Arthur.
Yeah. It was on that level. I was like, I just hope she goes
probably
away.
Probably the funniest
I hope they
character
write her
ever
out
now,
soon.
But...
It's true, yeah. DW more relevant than ever by the day. Okay, so I will go over my. I have a list here of points that I made while I was watching this movie, and we can discuss them. Some of them, they're not necessarily whether it was good or bad. I'll go over, I guess, a general like how I felt about the movie in total at the end of all this once we get through. But really quickly, I want to cover a few things that I noted about the movie. One was it immediately starts with singing and then cuts out, which I thought was very odd. I turned on the movie, the title card, well, yeah, they're like, they all have raincoats on and they're
and
like,
they
this is the name
of
the movie.
Of it, yeah.
And then it goes,
that's
it,
very like old
it
school.
Goes to credits over a stationary slide, which movies back in the day clearly just it's, I was like, well, I'm bored. Like, I think I checked my phone because I was like, oh yeah, it's still on the slide. Yeah. The credits. Yeah. Okay. It's a slide. So back, if you don't watch old movies a lot, which I don't, I mean, what have I seen? Psycho. I've seen, that may be the oldest movie other than this movie that I've seen.
Oh my
goodness.
I've seen
A Strangers on a Train, right?
Yeah.
I've
that's
seen
not
that.
My favorite one, but
it's not that bad. I remember enjoying it. I think I've not seen very many old movies.
Well,
past the 70s and 80s, yeah.
Well, I've only seen really a lot of those because I took film classes in college and I was forced to watch them most of the time while I was falling asleep. But
that's,
you know,
fair. Okay, so I guess this is chronological. But my next point is in the make them laugh, which I already talked about how I despise this. The least favorite scene in the entire movie, make them laugh with the musician character, which, I mean, I am a musician and I really did not enjoy this musician character.
Well, he's a performer
portrayal.
Too. Like,
yeah.
He kind of, he dances.
Fine. He's a psycho.
Like
he's literally a psycho. I just like, he made me uncomfortable and this made me super uncomfortable. Towards the end of that scene, the snare drum gets really loud and it's supposed to be like chaotic, I guess, with his dancing.
Yeah.
And it was
when he's like running up the walls and stuff.
Yeah, it was. I felt like I was in a nightmare. The drums would get really loud and the dancing wasn't on time and the drums weren't on time with the rest of the music. And it just like, it made me, I was like, I started to sweat a little bit. I was like, I'm really uncomfortable. I don't know why this is so bad, but I was not impressed with the production there. Not a fan of it. I don't know why they made the snare drum so loud that I had to turn down the volume of the movie. But, you know, I mean, that's just my musician audio subjective. I don't know why I felt like that.
That's not my favorite part of the movie either, but like I've said, I kind of understand. I mean, you know why you have it. It's to showcase Donald O'Connor's physical comedy skills, and I mean, it's pretty old school, but
Yeah, that kind of comedy died for a reason. I don't
Did
think
it really.
I think it died. Did I think it it's dead. Okay,
is that not name what Will Ferrell does.
No. Will Ferrell speaks uncomfortable nonsense, and you just hear it with no soundtrack, and you have to like exist in Will Ferrell's strange world for a few minutes. At his peak, he was really good. If you look at Step Brothers, if you look at the ballad of Talladega Nights, Ballad of Ricky Bobby, it's very much like Napoleon Dynamite in the same way that's good, except for it's the dialogue is
the
a little bit
The only one I
weirder.
Like is Anchorman.
And Anchorman is a classic too. I would consider those three possibly his best work. Those three.
Okay.
And I mean, they're great movies. I will watch them again and again and again. Okay, so I want to ask you, why is the first half, so in the talkies, they reveal in this movie, okay, talking pictures exist, like, we need to transfer our studio, and then it cuts off into the scene. It only does it a couple times in the movie, but it cuts off into them, I guess they're visiting another studio, and there's a talking picture scene being recorded.
Oh, the, like...
There's a bunch of girls, and they
the
all,
musical
like,
number
off
where they,
things.
Like... Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't quite sure what they were doing other than just watching another studio make a talkie, I guess, at that point.
I don't know.
For inspiration?
I think it's the same studio. I think it's the same studio, because at that point in time, they're not... The film that Don and Lena are in is not a musical. It's just a talking picture. Yeah. So I think that that's kind of showing that the studio... It's the other stuff that they're doing is also with sound, and so there's like music to it. I don't know. It is kind of a bizarre scene that's that you don't really know. And then what's the like half of the song is him like talking about these models and the outfits they're wearing,
but what
which
I was
are
gonna
so
say,
bizarre.
Okay, okay,
it's
okay,
like,
okay.
It's
yeah.
very odd. It's like I was like, I don't know. Is this an advertisement? Is it like a part of the thing? And my roommate like walks in while I'm watching the movie, and he's like, "Man, those girls are trying really hard to stay still, aren't
they?"
And
you can
tell.
And it's uncomfy because they move slightly. It's like they want to be totally stationary, but they can't.
Yeah,
and
they
so
can't
every time
do
they
it.
Move, it makes me feel like I'm doing that. Also, like,
well, and he was like, my roommate was like, they're moving. He's like, I can see them moving or whatever. And I'm like, well, yeah, those actresses are probably been standing there like that for hours while they film this.
Why put real people there if you want stationary?
If you want mannequins?
Yes.
No, I don't know. Well, because later then they dance with him and like that's part of the song or whatever. But I don't know. It's totally a weird, it's probably one of the weirdest points of the movie.
Yeah. And what I was going to say was the first half of that song, they're not even speaking words. They're like scatting almost. And they're just, it's like nonsense. It's like baby talk. And I just like, I don't want to be a part of anything that is like here's a musical number and then they just like mumble. They don't even say words. What do you call that? It's
I don't
something
even know
speak.
Because...
It's just like nonsense. Do you remember that part?
I mean,
of the...
I watched it, but I don't. I just blocked that part out. I'm sure I was
words.
Checking my phone during this. Like,
just,
I've already seen this.
I was so baffled at how they like it was just like a dancing number, and it was like. It was almost like it was directed as if they had something to say, like characters that were saying it would be highlighted at certain points, like they were saying something, but it was just not words.
Just,
it was mush.
Well, I think it's just kind of, like I said, to show that they're doing other things with the music or the sound aspect of the movies. But I will also say that kind of speaks to what I think is one of the weaknesses of the film is the fact that they just use these songs that had already been written and kind of stitched, like threw them into this movie. When really, in my opinion, the weakest part of the film as a whole, to some extent, is just the songs. Like, I like movie musicals because I'll listen to musicals just on their own. And I'm like, this is not a movie that I would just listen to these songs of people singing because they're really not that. I don't think they're that great of songs.
Yeah, I can agree. I definitely don't think they're that variotous either. It just
no,
seems
it's very
like
old school, like show tunes type stuff.
Yeah, which works for this movie.
Oh yeah,
as being,
I mean that's
like
the
a classic,
point, kind
I guess.
Of. Yeah.
Yeah. So it works, but it does not make for good listening entertainment. Afterwards.
No, I wouldn't just listen to it on Spotify.
Okay. Yeah. So the models were super uncomfortable. That scene, if you ever watch this movie,
it's
kind
of
the
funny.
Second worst.
They're
scene
working so hard, like trying so hard.
Yeah, okay. It makes sense though. All these scenes, they fit in the story, which I do really enjoy. The story, it doesn't break down into nonsense
the movie.
Almost ever. There's one unnecessary scene which we already briefly mentioned, which was where they decide to show you what they would put into the movie.
Oh,
just
the Broadway
just
melody
throw,
segment.
Just to
well,
throw
Gene
in
Kelly,
a
okay,
little story.
Like, I'm not here to defend artistic choices that they made in that sense, but Gene Kelly's a dancer. They're trying to make this movie. They're showing off his dancing, so they throw those in there. It's very like I said, it's already typical. They did it in American in Paris. They did it again in Singing in the Rain.
It's like when Michael Bay blows things up nowadays. It's just like, you know what? We gotta blow something up. Let's throw in a tap dance scene. Let's just do it. That's what the people want.
I love those segments because I just like to watch Gene Kelly dance. I can totally understand if watching people dance isn't your thing, that you would be like, what is this? I don't know what it is. I like that segment. I like it better than the American in Paris dance segment. That one's more ballet. This is more of a like athletic tap, not quite tap dancing, but interesting segment. I think I like it. I get why people would say they didn't.
Yeah, I guess I would never not a tap dancer. That's the bottom that's line fair. And that hurts my interest in a tap dancing film. But I don't really, it just not that into dancing in general though. Most musicals, it just like a lot of times I think dance moves are dumb. They look dumb, and like if it
just, well, it's kind of funny because a lot of them veer away from dancing now. I think that they don't have a lot of people who can do that sort of thing who are necessarily classically trained dancers who can actually dance up to this level. I mean, you've seen it if you watch other ones, like for instance, Hairspray, the heavy lifting of the dancing is being done by not the main characters. The actors can't necessarily do that type of dancing, which is what's kind of nice about the fact that Gene Kelly could do it. But it's kind of funny because even Debbie Reynolds, we talked about Debbie Reynolds couldn't do any of that stuff. She had to be trained to do all of it, and power to her for being able to figure out how to keep up with them in the Good Morning segment, because I don't think what she was doing was particularly easy. I don't think that I could be trained to keep up with Gene Kelly. So
yeah, I think that is a good point. I think they did a really good job. That was one of my, I preferred that dancing scene, sure, actually, to a lot of the other ones because of,
well,
there's
still, and
really
it is
well,
a song too. They're still singing a song in that, yeah, one. Broadway also, Melody doesn't have singing in it. It's just music and dancing.
Funny enough, when I saw that scene, I thought about my friends that I know that really like to dance, and I'm like, I wonder if my friends just start dancing ever, like in the middle of the night if they're all hanging out at their house. Like,
I have
maybe
never,
no one does it when I'm around, but maybe my friends just break out into dance numbers on
before
their own.
I have never done that. I promise.
As someone who
you
likes musicals, I'm surprised you've never tried to just get your friends into a dance number in the middle of like, it's 1:30, we're still talking, let's dance. Just like all try and do the same.
I mean, I'm just saying, I've never, ever done anything like that before in my life.
Well, you should try it. I'm going to try it, too. I mean, I'm not a dancer. And also,
I guess that's supposed to be sarcasm. I have 100% done that in my life.
What?
Just randomly danced. I mean, I'm not a dancer. I wouldn't swear that I was a dancer. I mean, but if nobody's at my house and I put music on, I'm going to dance to it.
Okay, well, just dancing at parties is one thing. I mean, like, put together, like, a dance
never
number.
I've never choreographed my own dance number at my house.
That's what I mean. Choreographed, like, dancing to the to what's happening in the conversation.
No,
versus
I've never done that.
Dancing to music. Okay. Good.
I legitimately haven't done that.
That's fair. We should try it. I want to do that sometime.
I think one thing that we haven't talked about yet that I would like to talk about, and I think we're getting close to this point in the story, is the Singing in the Rain segment, which is easily one of the most famous movie scenes in all of history.
I had seen it before I watched this movie.
And it's really amazing. Again, we're just showcasing Gene Kelly singing, his dancing. It's really incredible. It's kind of funny. I did read where they were like, people, I guess there was sort of a legend that said that he had done that all in one take, which was absolutely not true, obviously. It was shot over a couple of days, but it is, I mean, he was definitely wet. They said he wore this like soaked to the bone wool suit the entire time. And also that he had at various times a like 103 degree fever while he's filming this. So
yikes.
Definitely impressive.
Can you die? 103 is like a really high fever, isn't it?
It's not like death fever, but it's pretty high. It's definitely like you're ill and you shouldn't be doing this athletic dancing in the freezing rain on a studio set, but
there. Okay, the last point I wanted to make is, I actually, funny that you say that you don't like ballet dancing as much. I tend to prefer interpretive and like ballet, like smooth dancing, just because I think it's visually like, I guess,
I mean,
more,
I can see
more
that
stunning, or like
there was, I would say that there's a lot of
like
repetitive
of
movements sometimes that Gene Kelly kind of does. There were very, like, especially if you look at Moses Supposes, at one point I swear they're doing the same dance move over and over and over and over and over again, but you know.
Yeah, I just feel, I guess I like more the emotional, I feel more emotionally attached to like slow moving,
sure,
which to say my favorite scene is the one where she has the long flowing dress on.
Oh, during Broadway Melody. Citrice.
Okay.
Who I guess, she became kind of a movie star like later, but they definitely hired Sid Charisse, who was a famous to some extent dancer, to be his partner in the Broadway melody sequences and to do those dancing, to do that dancing with Gene Kelly. Yes, it's a very, I see what you're saying. It's a very like not, it's powerful, and that's not necessarily the word that I'm searching for.
I think it's visually striking, yeah, like, more so than any other scene, which my second favorite visual scene is when Gene Kelly and I can't remember her name to save my life.
The Debbie girl, Reynolds?
Not Lena Lamont.
Debbie Reynolds. Then.
Debbie Reynolds. Kathy. Yeah, when they walk into the studio and they're on the ladder at one point, there's mm-hmm. a lot of smoke and the lighting is like multicolored.
When he's like telling her that he loves her, basically.
Yeah, so that scene looks, I think, is really well done. And nice, it's similar too to this last one, but this last one in scope and scale is just like really big. And the way they have
she
like...
She has that gigantic train kind of like, flowing off of her dress.
Almost like a scarf, but it's like, yeah, I don't even know. It's like 30 feet long.
It's huge.
Yeah, and then the way they have the stairs on mm-hmm. the set, it almost looks like they're just casting light. They're smooth on the edges and they like gradient into different colors, and it's like one color repeatedly, so it looks like there's like stripes of color that are actually stairs. So this perspective is really cool because they'll climb up the stairs and they'll be like way higher up, like vertically, but not that far away. And seem, it's just like, it messes with your perspective a lot, the way they move around that room, and it looks amazing. It's really cool because that definitely affects like how you see her scarf and it's flowing around. Mm-hmm. By far my favorite, because just, I guess, the way they utilized light for one, and then perspective with the flowing giant dress. And I mean, the dancing too is smoother, which I prefer to watch too. Mm-hmm. Really fast tap dancing where someone is staring at me and smiling like, be entertained. This was meant for you. You have to be entertained.
Really hard at this.
Yes. This is entertainment. You know it is. I don't like being told. I don't like being stared at. But yeah, I preferred that. So overall, I did enjoy this movie. You know what? Good. Surprised me. I went in thinking, no, I'm not going to like this. I already know. This is the point of this show, is that we will have clashing opinions. But I did like this movie. Mostly the story. Not so much the comedy. Not so much the dancing, except for when it was smoother. And didn't like Lena Lamont. But I did think the story was really good. And it has an Inception-like twist ending where they're making the movie in the movie. And that makes me happy. So.
It was fun. It's a fun movie. Again, one of my favorites easily. It's just it makes me feel good to watch it. So
yeah. So I think it is well worth a watch if you haven't seen that many older movies. It's an accessible one. I think it is. It moves quickly and
it's not that long. I mean, it's not pretty that short. Long.
The portrayal of Hollywood is entertaining.
Yeah,
it very much refers to a time that is not today, but is similar to today in the way that celebrities are held, I guess, by some people, not by me. But
I think there's a thread of that. It's not a particularly large portion, but the way that you kind of get a peek, I guess, behind the mask, because you see these people who are actors, and then there is a subplot which involves how the audience or the public thinks that Don and Lena are in a relationship when really they can't stand each other, or she's in love with him, but he doesn't want to be with her, but then they have to put it up for appearances in the public. And obviously we know that sort of thing still goes on a lot of the time. So,
yeah. So it does say a lot. There's a lot more to this movie than just musical numbers for the sake of musical numbers, and that's where it has value, and it really does. I can see how it is the defining American just because of its themes, musical.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. So
okay, so really quickly, let's just say, what was your favorite scene for sure?
My favorite scene was the dance with not it wasn't with the main
it wasn't,
girl
it's not Who with Debbie it Reynolds with? It's with Sid Charisse.
Okay,
she has Sid no Charisse. Name I don't think, because she never speaks a line. She's so, just in the Broadway melody portion.
So yeah, that was actually inside my least favorite scene.
I know,
too, which is
like,
interesting.
You hate this whole thing.
I hate the fact
like,
that it breaks off but I do like how it looks visually and the way they did the, I guess, the artistic choices for directing and just movie making in general in that part were spot on and good. Made it was different than what was going on most of the time throughout the
it
musical
is.
Numbers.
It was
so
it
was
kind
refreshing.
Of a departure from the rest
yes.
of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Even in the middle of what is the most pointless scene in the movie.
Well, that's not my favorite scene of the movie. My favorite scene of the movie probably is Good Morning. I just think it's fun to see O'Connor and Kelly and Reynolds all dancing together and dancing well. I think it's a fun song. And it's sort of, it's just fun and energetic and likable. So I like, that's my favorite scene.
Yeah, that's good. I really liked, when Lena Lamont was, I guess when she bursts out of the cake.
Oh, Debbie Reynolds is in the cake there. That's fun too. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. So Debbie Reynolds bursting out of the
cake. And then she hits Lena Lamont with the cake later.
Yes. Okay. So that her riding with him up to that scene, and then that scene itself is actually, I think, the funniest work in the movie because of how it flips, like, the characters. Like, the characters are, like, on guard. Like, neither of them are showing what their true personality is, because she's being guarded because she just met him and doesn't want him to think he's hot stuff. And
she's, like, embarrassed because she's going to be this dancer at this thing. And she says that she's better than him because she wants to be a stage actress when he's just in the movies.
Yeah, and he is...
He's offended by that.
Yeah, he's mad because she doesn't care about him.
She doesn't fawn over him in the car.
It breaks his confidence at first, but then, like, he gets the second chance and he's got his confidence back again. But it's just, it's good not to see them so comfortable. Like, it's definitely, their characters are more uncomfortable in that point in both those scenes, and it flips on them, like, who's comfortable and who's uncomfortable. And I think that's a really cool dynamic. I think that's a really good way to start the movie.
It's just well written. Yes. The scenes are just they're good dialogue writing, they're good movie writing, scene writing.
Okay, second favorite scene.
Yeah, so I can get on that. Get on board with that.
So are we going to hold,
I don't know what time,
Gangs of New York for a second? We want to hold that till the next episode.
Oh gosh,
we're about at an hour, I think. Yeah, so follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
If we don't have any yet.
Yeah, we're going to have by the time this comes out, we'll have a Facebook and a Twitter.
Well,
we probably shared it with you if you're listening, so hopefully.
We're kind of talking here. You're going to cut most of this, I'm assuming, too.
I'm not going to cut it because you said we're going to cut it.
No. That's literally what you do. You say, cut that. No, we're going to cut this. No. We can cut this later if you want. No, you're going to cut it to make it sound real nice and profesh.
It does sound nice and profesh. It sounds amazing. Your voice sounds great. You're confident. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I am confident, but...
I think we're going to wrap it up here for this week.
We'll plug our social media when we have some. We don't have that just yet, but...
Yeah, if you're listening to this, you've probably been shared on our social media, but if not, I think
obviously if you're listening to this, you're probably one of our friends anyway, so
so rad. Yeah, hopefully in the future we'll make a Facebook group too, and we'll talk talk movies with people online. Really fun. Have our own personal Facebook group. Maybe we'll have a Patreon, and everyone on our Patreon could be in our Facebook group, us to make podcasts. okay
but anyway, thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed our discussion of Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, and we will be back next week to talk about Gangs of New York.